Welcome to the Film Experience. It's our special SmackDown 2018 contest. We're going to be discussing the supporting actress race. And with me, I have my regular conspirators, Chris Pyle.
Hello.
Murtada El Fadl.
Hi, everyone.
And we have newbies to the SmackDown, Ginny O'Keefe.
Hi.
And Robin Wright.
Hello.
And Ginny, you are an actress in L.A.
Yes,
so
I am.
You get the honor of being first to speak. I want to know, as an actor, watching these, are you thinking, this one of these five, that's the role I would want to play?
I think the one that just makes me so jealous and so like, God, I wish I had that. And watching it, it was so entertaining for me was Rachel Weisz. Cause
yeah.
I mean, it was just, like I said, I think she's an actress also that is loved, but isn't nearly loved enough. And seeing her in this role being so like, just like a viper and manipulative, and it was so fun and entertaining to watch. I just walked out of there and I was just like, God, I mean, playing that must have been the most fun thing in the world. Mm-hmm. It seemed like such a treat for her.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked like one. So
yeah, I mean, when you get juicy dialogue, I'm sure it helps to
exactly
not just for characterization, but to energize the whole performance. So you're like, ooh, mm-hmm. I'm going to attack this. Murtada, I know you rewatched everything, even though we've seen things recently. So what stood out for you this time that was a surprise?
What stood out for me is I don't think I've always been between Emma and Olivia, Rachel and Olivia are like the MVPs of the favorite.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess watching it this time and looking at Emma Stone, I just don't think she got enough credit for how just perfectly she modulated this performance. I was very taken by just her physicality. I know she's like in the movie, she's the one who gets to do all the reaction shots and the gestures, which I noticed the first time, but I think what I noticed more this time is just the way she fills the frame with her body. And it just makes any frame that she is in more interesting to look at. So
mm-hmm.
I still love all three performances and I still think Olivia is the best performance, but I just think Emma has raised in my estimation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did anybody else, have any of you else seen the movies more than once?
I mean, I've seen The Favourite 3 times now and Beale Street 3 times. I really admire you for being able to stomach Vice a second time, Murtada.
Oh God, I can barely do that first.
Yeah.
Anything change for you on multiple watches?
I mean, I think my appreciation for almost everything about The Favourite kind of deepens with each one. I think I think the one that I find myself the most moved by is actually Rachel Weisz. Just because her character arc, especially as I've watched it again multiple times, is, I mean, she essentially gets screwed, and it's like, it's the point of her character arc that she is kind of a victim a little bit of like this circumstance, certainly to what Emma Stone is doing and the manipulation she's doing, because when you rewatch her performance, like the depth of feeling that she actually has for Anne comes through a little bit more, and how she's maybe a harder person who has a lot of very deep feelings, but has a very clear idea of what love is to her that doesn't really jive with the way the rest of the world wants love to be. And I find it really moving.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Robin?
I mean, The Favourite, I've watched it twice, but I think at the moment, I've just written about Marina. So I spent 2 days editing a video and writing about her, like for your consideration. And I watched Rubber a third time just for her. And I wrote that in the piece because she's kind of stuck with me. Everyone was talking about, you know, Yalitza and Quran, and I watched it again just for her, and I think she's my favourite now, but it's only been, like, based on momentum, you know, with with her favourite ladies, it's very hard to call, but it's between those three. Regina King and Amy Adams just didn't do it for me, really. I mean, especially Amy Adams, but with this, the I don't dislike her, but she didn't win for Junebug, you know.
But the thing I found about Marina de Tavira that was so fascinating on the second watch was how kind of it's obviously Cleo's story, so it's Yalitza's movie a little bit more, if it's ever not Alfonso Cuarón's movie. but the way that they're kind of calibrated as opposites, the way that Marina de Tavira gets to have these big emotional moments, but we never really get inside of her head, whereas Cleo is very subdued and we're in her head the whole time. I found that really interesting, especially the way that Marina de Tavira kind of passes off the story a little bit to Yalitza. It's really interesting to watch once you've already seen what Roma is going to reveal to you.
I think. Certainly more active, like an active support versus the passive lead, and they kind of complement each other, yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm.
And the performances being so much in conversation to what is going on thematically and what the movie has to say about privilege, I think is really interestingly realized in the performance.
One thing that with the Smackdowns, they're usually done many, many years later because they're more retrospectives usually. and I do wonder about Marina de Tavira, how, you know, history, like in 20 years, what people are going to think of these performances, because one of the things I noticed in the ballots, from the readers are always the last panelists, so we get lots of votes, and almost everyone's comments about her is about the surprise of the nomination.
Yeah.
Which is neither here nor there in terms of a performance, but it's one of those nominations that was so surprising that I think it immediately makes everyone rethink in the moment. And it was sort of a happy surprise because it's, you know, it's not like a default vote, you know. You know, it's somebody that they actually thought of that critics weren't thinking of or what have you. Yeah. But I do wonder, like, later on, will people be like, huh, why was that nominated? Because it's so distant from the camera a lot of times, too.
I think in the future, people will wonder why she was such a surprise. Like, it feels like she's kind of belonged there all year, all along. At least to the extent that, like, Yalitza showed up at Critics' Choice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's surprising that Marina de Tavira has been, in hindsight, it's surprising that she's been nowhere.
Yeah.
I mean, what you said, Nathaniel, the sort of observational way that Cuarón films her in many scenes, she is so far away from the camera. Like, I remember that scene where she rebuffs that drunk guy, and it's just literally, they're both shadows in the distance. that is one of the reasons why I didn't react to the performance, because I wanted to see her. I wanted to see her face. Even her big scene, her face is half obscured, the one where she tells her children about the divorce. Mm-hmm. One of the kids sort of is right in front of her most of the scene, and you can't even see her face, let alone in close-up.
Yeah. I think what I really loved about this performance, like, obviously the nomination was surprising to me, but the performance itself was also surprising because I was expecting, like most people, you know, the typical, like, witchy, rich housewife who thinks that everyone else is beneath her. And then we get into it, and what I loved about her performance, though, is how human she makes her, and that, like, this is a woman going through a mess in her life, mm-hmm. and she's not going to be pretty. She's not going to be she's not going to be the center of the story also, but she's going to be there. And she obviously is a big part of Cleo's life because Cleo loves her children and in turn has to love her. And on the end on the beach, when they all break down and she's like, no, Cleo, you don't understand. We love you. We love you. And that just, you kind of realize that, like, she's been in there all along in her life, but maybe not in the, you know, most comforting of ways. Like, yeah, she does work for her, but she's in her life for better or worse. And, like, she's given her a family.
Yeah. I think that that push and pull between how much Cleo is part of the family and how she's also not part of the family is very well observed in the movie overall, including in that that might be my favorite part of Marina's performance, is that you get the sense that that she's not always thinking of Cleo as part of the family, except for when she is. So there's this like flip-flopping that I think people actually do a lot of times with people that they spend tons of time with, but not necessarily always think of in intimate ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, even like coworkers a little bit like that too.
You don't realize how much you need them and how much you love them until,
Yeah.
They are on.
Until there's the threat of that being over.
Yeah.
So one thing I was curious about how you guys felt about Regina King is that she has kind of like a mini movie within her own movie, which I think is a kind of a rare gift for true supporting roles, which this is. I mean, obviously Rachel and Emma are kind of leads, as we've all discussed before. But it's not all that often when the character that is absolutely 100% supporting kind of gets their own mini movie within the movie. And for me, that's when Regina's performance comes together. But I know that doesn't totally work for everyone, because I've noticed in, you know, ballots, that's the Puerto Rico sequence seems to be divisive, which surprised me because it really was the moment where I really fell for the performance. Did anybody else feel differently about that?
No, I agree, I think. I think this, early on when she confronts the other mother, she's about to leave and she grabs it. It's that clip you've seen 100 times. She says, like, it doesn't matter where it comes from. I think that's a great little scene. But then, yeah, I think when you're anticipating that movie, you're like, oh, Regina King's everywhere, and you watch it and you're like, oh, she's disappeared. But yeah, when she comes at the end there, that mini movie, as you mentioned, and you want more of that, and you kind of swept up at the end there, so... Yeah, it's going to be a great nomination, Cliff. So I agree with you, Nathaniel.
I think one of the reasons maybe why it's more divisive than I thought is I noticed the people who really like the performance who don't like that scene always talk about her relationships with her family members, which is the bulk of the performance where she's in the scene but not calling attention to herself. Like, I think the best scene in the whole movie is the scene between the two families meeting to reveal the pregnancy.
Oh. That scene has not been talked about enough this year, and it's incredible.
Yeah.
So good.
But she's really not drawing attention to herself, and yet she's so anchored in the scene to what the other characters are going through, which I just love her as an actor. So I just found that interesting that people don't seem to, if they love that, they don't always love the Puerto Rico sequence, maybe because she's at a remove from the rest of the story.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing I would say about her is that if she is the true supporting character actress and also a supporting character, because she's supporting everyone in the movie. She's supporting Kiki Lane. She's supporting Coleman Domingo. Even in Puerto Rico, she's supporting Emily Reyes, because that scene is also about that character. So that's kind of what I loved about the performance. Like, the warmth that you feel towards her is because of all what her character is doing for the other characters.
And I'm with you on that too, Murtada, because there's so much of her performance that I think is kind of about navigation and how to, like, navigate what is right and wrong in the situation. Like, you're talking about the scene of the two families where she's like trying to play facilitator, but then once it gets past a certain point that's unacceptable, she speaks her mind. But then the kind of trepidation she has in the Puerto Rico scenes where she's, you know, walking this very fine line of wanting to support this woman, but also tell her what she knows to be true. I think it's really, really difficult. And the way that Regina King makes it look easy is maybe one of the reasons that this performance has been kind of weirdly taken for granted. But I think for degree of difficulty points, she probably has some of the highest in this category. Because it's like, if you do it well, no one's going to notice the strings of what you're doing.
Yeah. I thought the Puerto Rico scene was, I wasn't expecting it, but I wouldn't give it up for anything in the world, mm-hmm. because it showed just how committed the character is, and it showed how far she's willing to go, literally and figuratively. But I mean, I could understand why some people thought it was out of place. But for me, I think it gives her, like, I think it was one of the best scenes for her in the entire movie, when she tries to confront her and hold her, and then she has that breakdown, and then she's like, God, what am I going to do now? Because my son-in-law is basically going to fry because I couldn't get this woman to mm-hmm. talk. But yeah, I thought it was great, because it really showed, like, obviously we knew this character pretty well before then, but then you see her in Puerto Rico and you're like, wow, we thought we knew her before, but she's willing to do anything. Mm-hmm. And I love that.
Yeah, and I think it plays really well. I mean, this, speaking of being a supporting actor, not just for the other characters, but for the themes of the movie, that she really internalizes the movie's insistence that, like, love will get you through anything. Because that's that whole sequence is, again, as you were saying, Jenny, how far she'll take it. And also her just belief in it, that she's just going to do this. No matter how difficult it is. So I found her performance very moving. But this also reminds me that, speaking of the Puerto Rico sequence, also reminds me of how important it is to have, like, sensitive direction in writing in movies. Because when I thought about the topic of the book and the plot lines, you think in the conversations that are going on today that, I thought, oh, this will immediately be very hot potato movie and divisive, and people will be angry with the movie. But because it's so sensitive to all the viewpoints, including Emily Rios's, you don't get that at all. Like, people just take it all in rather than being outraged by it or upset by it, because it's really sensitively thought through about how everyone in every scene might be feeling.
I want to just add, it's on Barry Jenkins and James Baldwin, because that's in the book too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's a very faithful adaptation that is not just a boring copy paste.
Yeah.
One of the games we like to play on the SmackDown is, if you had to recast these women in each other's roles, who do you think would be interesting with the different challenges? Like, who would you want to see their take on another character in this lineup?
I
want to see Regina King as Rachel Weisz's Sarah of The Favorite. I want to see horny Regina King. I want to see manipulative Regina King. I want to see dejected Regina King.
I would like to see, obviously the story would have to be different in the setting, but I would like to see Amy Adams in Marina Dejtyarova's role.
Mm-hmm.
I think she'd rock that. I also think the part would have to be a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
But for Amy Adams to be like, yeah, sure, I'll take it. But I think she's so good at... I love Amy. And I think she would be great in that, messy housewife role. But she comes up... is a better person by the end of it. But I would love to see her in that.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that you bring that up, because I was thinking the exact opposite. Like, because I don't know Marina that well as an actor, this is the only thing I've seen her in, I was totally like, how would she be at the Amy Adams role? Because she's so good in
Janie.
Yeah, because she's so good in Roma at that sort of ambivalence that the character is a little opaque, but I think kind of purposefully, because it's not her story, and she's so self-absorbed, but for valid reasons, because she's going through this personal trauma.
Yeah.
So I think it would be interesting to see her as a more purposefully opaque character rather than through circumstance, like Lynn Cheney, where everything is like an agenda somehow. what you will show and what you won't show and what you're hoping to get from other people. So I think that would be interesting.
It's all part of the plan.
Yeah.
I saw Marina de Tavera in a movie at Sundance, and she also plays sort of a prickly mother, although it's a little different because there she's sort of grieving. But I would actually like to see her in a movie where she's not prickly. So maybe in the Regina King role, where what she's leading with is warmth, because I think that would be something different.
Yeah.
To see her in.
How about you, Robin? You've been quiet.
Yeah, I'm trying to picture Emma Stone as a young Lynn Cheney. I don't know if that would work.
Oh my God.
She could be like criticized as being bad casting, like Jennifer Lawrence in American Hustle, I suppose.
Oh, right.
Yeah, to somebody who's 12 playing someone who's 30. But, I think swap Rachel and Emma around would be interesting, I think, as well. Seeing how that goes, but I like the idea of Regina King doing the Roma. I think that she would suit that.
Yeah, you know, when I was interviewing Rachel Weisz about The Favorite, one of the exercises that she said Yorgos Lanthimos had them do was to, it sounded like they were playing Twister, not literally, but like they would have to put themselves into all these weird shapes and like touch each other in strange places and say each other's lines and like shout them out, did all these weird acting exercises. And the point was to remove the sort of period piece drama, like she called it the declamatory way of doing like costume drama, which made me wonder if at any point Emma Stone had uttered that 96-year-old French whore's majuju line, because
that's a good line.
Screaming it at Olivia Colman with her arm behind her back.
The fact that they use that at the SAG Awards just brought the biggest smile to my face. I was just like, yes. Like, they put that in the clip for her nomination, and I was just like, there it is.
Yeah, I think he used it at BAFTA as well. I just can't see the Academy using that.
No.
We can't have that those words. It's just going to be her probably just walking down the hallway or something like that. There's no suitable dialogue.
Yeah.
I mean, she has the best lines in the movie, and she nails really every one of them. So they will have a lot to choose from.
Yeah, they will. One of the readers who sent in a ballot mentioned how crazy it is that line is about Nicholas Holt's character. And Nicholas Holt was in About a Boy with Rachel Weisz, and he was this, like, teeny tiny boy.
Yes.
So it was like, so cute.
It's like this reunion we did not expect whatsoever, this About a Boy reunion. So since we're talking about supporting actresses, this is some sort of a tangent, but who in these movies do you think supports these supporting actresses well? Like, who do you think is an MVP at helping them bring out what they bring out? Because acting is a collaborative art form, as Jenny is, I'm sure you know. So... Who would you guys say is the MVP of like pushing them to these heights that they've achieved for this?
I know that Murtada is also a fan, but the one that immediately leaps to mind is Colman Domingo in Beale Street, that ensemble is just like filled with people who should have gotten more due than they did, including Stephan James, Brian Tyree Henry, but Colman Domingo. In the way that Regina King gets to kind of support everybody that she's interacting with, Colman Domingo does as well, but with a lot less screen time. He's like as alive with his performers and with Regina King enough to imagine that like he could have had his own little Puerto Rico tangent, or we could have seen more of the sequences where they're, you know, stealing from the backs of the, trucks and then reselling the merchandise, like that could have been its own little mini movie. He's really wonderful.
Yeah. I say jumping off that, just because I loved the dinner scene or the Saturday night scene when she invites everybody over. I gotta go with, I don't know if I'm pronouncing her name right, but Tiona Paris, who plays Ernestine. The daughter?
Yeah, she's great.
Oh my God. She was my MVP, especially after that scene when she goes after the sisters. Mm-hmm. And she's like, touch my baby sister, I dare you. And Regina King has to like reel her in, and she's like, come on, stop, let's try to be civil. Let's try to be good. Like, she's being such a mom, and I love it. But Tiona, obviously, she has less screen time than Coleman Domingo, but I still think that she just gives it all out. And I think it's great that the character, which obviously it's from a book, but I think it's great that she had more than just one daughter to focus on. Mm. She had more than one child. And the fact that it's this like tough, you know, squirrely, fiery girl is the best. And I really thought she gave it her all, and she made Regina, you know, feel more like a mother and feel more like, you know, the matriarch of the household.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I will second everything that Chris and Ginny just said, but I'll also add one more character in If Beale Street Could Talk, which just shows you the depth of character and performances in that film.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of the polar opposite of motherhood from Regina King is Anjanae Ellis as Stephan James' mother. So if we had gotten more in that scene or got them another scene later on, just face to face, but I think the performance of Ellis also enhances Regina's performance because they are polar opposites, the characters.
Yeah.
So then it deepens both their characters and their performances to sort of see the other one.
Mm-hmm. One thing I want to say, since we're on the subject of Tiona Paris, is she's so good in Spike Lee's Chirac.
Yes.
From a couple of years ago.
I haven't seen it.
Where she played Lisa Strada. She was amazing in that movie. And so, like, I'm hoping she gets more, you know, since Spike Lee's also in the Oscar race this year.
Yeah.
I feel like we should give a shout out to the fact that she can also carry a film because she was the lead in that mm-hmm. film and mm-hmm. very strong.
This is the first I've seen her in anything. So I definitely want to see more of her.
Yeah. Well, Chirac is definitely worth a rental. And, you know, I have already mentioned it, but I think since I brought up this question, my answer would probably be Nicholas Holt for both mm-hmm. Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz. Because I think he's playing off them and, like, he's kind of an immovable character. Like, he's the same horrible person in every scene, but the way he reacts to them and the way he thinks he can react with them is so different in the scenes. I just think he's great in the movie.
I suppose John Alwyn as well, to some, it's not as strong, but certainly the Emma Stone character that these two boys think, well, I suppose they think they're supporting the women when really they're not. You know, they just look like fools. But I mean, that scene when Nicholas Holt stands over, and it's a gif, the favourite's got a million gifs, stands over Rachel Weisz, and he's like twice her height. But you still know she would kill him. Don't get me started on those gifts, man.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a movie that was ready to be gifted all opportunities. Especially if the dialogue is printed on the gif.
Yeah, that's a bonus.
So moving away from these performances a little bit, the movies themselves, like, how are you feeling about the supporting actress race versus the rest of the Oscar race? Do you think it's one of the better competitions? Do you think it's about par for the course of what we're dealing with this year at the Oscar race?
It could be a lot worse. I mean, like, you could say if it's not like act, like, I don't know. I mean, I really, really don't like Amy Adams' performance. I don't necessarily think it's all her fault.
Mm-hmm.
Like, are we ever unhappy to see Amy Adams? No. And then otherwise, I think you're talking about four really, really great performances. Even Emma Stone, like, we can all say that she's safely a lead of the movie. Rachel Weisz is much more of a gray area, but, like, even so, it's a, like, I think she, it's one of her best performances.
Mm-hmm.
If not her best, on some days I feel that.
Yeah.
It feels like this race is a little more free of the toxicity of everything else that's going around, and like some of the just like even not toxic but just like outright bad calls, because I think even Amy Adams is a little subjective in me saying that it's bad.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas there's just like overt bad out in a lot of even surprising categories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a very strange Oscar year, which is why I asked that. I'm a little like, I mean, I'm known as like, famously known as absolutely hating Bohemian Rhapsody and everything about it. But even the movies that I don't like hate that way, I just don't get how they ended up where they are. And Vice is one of those movies. Like, I can see why people like it. It's one of those, but I can't figure out why anybody loves it. Whereas with Bohemian Rhapsody, even though I despise it, I totally get why some people love it.
Mm-hmm.
So that sort of mishigosh is easier for me to deal with in a way, but with Vice, I'm like, who put this at number one in so many categories?
Seriously.
I feel that way about a few other things elsewhere in the Oscar race, and maybe this is just like nitpicking here and like a total side conversation, but like I think the worst feature of all the Oscar nominees of any movie nominated is Never Look Away. Has anybody else seen this 9,000 hour movie? It's 19 different movies. It's actively bad. The plot doesn't kick in until an hour in. It's a very bad movie. And then like that, have you guys you haven't talked about the shorts yet, have you?
No.
Because we don't have to fully get into it, but like the shorts this year are quite a bit. It's like my running like gross joke was like everybody makes fun of Christopher Nolan for all of the dead wives, but like the Oscar nominated shorts, it's like, look at all of these dead children. It's like, it's this weird, creepy obsession that it's like, I can't imagine people sitting through this lineup and not being upset. Mm-hmm. And then you have also this Oscar-nominated short named Skin that I think is fairly reprehensible. So it's like, even if we have issues with supporting actress, it's like, but it feels so free. It's like we can be enthusiastic and buoyant and happy. And
yeah.
So it's like, it's just such a gloomy year that it's like, how can we complain about this race?
Yeah, I would say, I've seen Never Look Away to answer your question, but I still think it's better than Green Book, which is just absolutely the worst thing ever to be nominated for an Oscar.
They're both so bad, it's almost a little bit like splitting hairs. Like, Never Look Away doesn't have any insidiousness with it, though I do kind of feel like it hates women a little bit. But, like, yes. Yes.
And I would have to say one thing about category fraud. I don't really like to talk about it, but if Emma and Rachel save this from Linda Cardellini and one more nomination for Green, then all the power to category four.
Yeah, it could have been a lot.
No, you can't say that on this podcast.
Okay, but the Linda Cardellini thing, I think people were just afraid that that was going to happen, or like they thought it would be a Maggie Gyllenhaal Crazy Heart situation, but like where were the receipts for that ever going to be a thing?
Well, not everywhere,
the way Marina de Tavira has been.
I just want to say, as an actor, I love Linda Cardellini. So I get what you're saying. I get what everybody's upset about. But I have loved her in so many things that I just want to say that.
So please, I stuck up with Bloodline because of her.
Yeah. And Freaks,
like
and
her.
Freaks and Geeks is dear to my heart forever.
So good in Brokeback Mountain. Oh my god.
Yeah.
It's my favorite performance of hers.
Yeah. So yeah, this Oscar race has been very strange, very strange.
Yeah.
But the supporting actress race is what I like, is it's evened out as well. At one point it was like Regina King's gonna win, but Amy Adams, when Vice was seen, everyone was like, oh no, it's gonna be Amy Adams. Mm-hmm. And then everyone sort of simmered down a bit, and then the SAG came along and said, no, it's not going to be Regina King. And the favourites kind of like had the same kind of momentum all along. And now, obviously, Marina gets in, which shows you the strength of Roma as well. So all of a sudden, we've got this... I don't think Amy Adams is going to win, but I think we've got this four-horse race.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's definitely more up in the air than most races, yeah.
Which I like, because, you know, I like that rather than having one Julianne Moore, you know.
Yeah. And with Amy Adams, I mean, like, Chris, I agree with you. Who doesn't love to watch Amy Adams in anything? Like, I'd watch her watch paint dry. But I think this isn't a performance. Again, I did not like this movie, like a lot of people, but it's not a bad performance. It's just a, just not a great movie. And I think it had all of the ingredients to get a nomination anyway, even before it came out. It was like, you know, A-list actress,
mm-hmm.
playing, it's a biopic kind of film, political figure, someone who's kind of, you know, it's a divisive political figure, to say the least. So it had all the ingredients for a nomination, but I feel like that's kind of all that's kind of pushed her to get that nomination in a way, besides her performance. And same goes to Sam Rockwell. So, God, we'll talk justice for Timothy Chalamet.
You too can be nominated for a Funny or Die sketch.
Oh my God. I'm watching it and it just made me angrier and angrier. I was like, what are they going to use for the clip in the Oscars for his nomination? That's just like Sam Rockwell Vice. And it's like eating ribs.
Eating ribs and saying, hot damn.
For all the Marys of the world. Yeah. but I couldn't handle that. And if I, being perfectly honest, if I could swap anyone out for Amy Adams, I would put in Claire Foy.
Yeah, that was my next question. So Jenny, thanks for taking us there.
Oh, sorry.
No. I mean, no, but that is a question we have to do. So who do you wish was in the lineup and who would you take out for them?
Claire Foy.
I mean, I would second Claire Foy. I love her. I loved her in First Man, but I have two answers. One is actually something that could have happened and something that had no chance in hell of happening. So Sakura Andu in Shoplifters is the one should have been there.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, Roma aside, they don't care about non-English language performances. So, and the one that should have really happened is Elizabeth Debicki in Widows.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, see, Elizabeth Debicki is my, like, I'm giving away my own awards, but she's my gold medalist this year for supporting actress. And the fact that she couldn't get arrested anywhere makes me so crazy.
Yeah.
I would take out anyone if I could have her in there.
Yeah.
If Emma Stone was put in the proper category, then Elizabeth could fit into Emma Stone's spot.
There you go.
Yep, there it is. So Emma Stone would still get nominated, just
different. My own supporting actress picks this year were so far outside of, like, what was the mainstream, other than Regina King and Rachel Weisz being nominated, and Murtada, you mentioned the incredible Sakura Ando in Shoplifters. Mm-hmm. My other two picks that were on my personal ballot are never showed up anywhere. It was Mackenzie Davis in Tully and Molly Parker for Madeline's Madeline.
Okay.
Molly Parker is doing some really high wire, difficult stuff to do in that movie that is doing nothing but that. Molly Parker kind of has to play this theater director who is actively compassionate and exploiting her subject, who is this troubled teenager and is like conscious of the fact that she's exploiting her and like feels bad, but then is also forwarding it and is just kind of like human, but also awful, but also not awful. I can't recommend that wild movie enough to everybody, but especially, the lead Helena Howard, but Molly Parker as well, who like nobody was talking about what she's doing, and it's incredibly difficult work. Molly Parker.
I love that you mentioned, Mackenzie Davis. I thought she was incredible in Tully. Another high wire part, because, you know, spoiler alert, she's playing sort of a concept rather than a character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she has to play this idea.
Yeah, she has to play an idea of a character.
It is real and it's not.
Yeah, and that can't be easy, and she's great in it. And she's, like, so much fun to watch. You don't quite know where she's going with her choices, but then it totally comes together beautifully.
She has to recall her scene partner, essentially. She kind of has to mimic her in a way that is not obvious.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, when you rewatch it, is really revealing and exciting.
Yeah.
And she's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, they used to, like, well, they still do, but they used to like funny in the supporting roles, didn't they? I mean, that's where you're going to win if you're going to win an Oscar, your supporting characters. I'd agree with what you said there, Elizabeth Debicki, definitely, and Sakura Ando. And also the two that SAG picked, which was Emily Blunt and Margot Robbie. Mary Queen of Scots, one of the last ones I saw. And I just wanted to just see more of her. And Saoirse Ronan was great, but the scene at the end that everyone spoke about is now, but Margot Robbie is so good in that scene, in the whole film. Mm-hmm. Kind of sort of sympathise with her. And Emily Blunt as well, kind of forgotten how she was spoken highly of when the film came out, like Toni Collette, Hereditary, you know, that these two are going to go head to head. You know, went in support and actually came strong in the end. And I'd also, so them two, I'd also add, I don't know if you've seen Happy as Lazaro. Alice Roloff's sister, Alba, is in that. She kind of turns up at the end, but kind of steals it. In the last act.
I had forgotten that the director's sister was in that.
Yeah. And she's had a great year as well. She was in another film, also directed by one with Valerie Galino, Daughter of Mine. She's fantastic, you know. So she's had a good year, but the ones you've mentioned and those three definitely as well for me.
You mentioned Hereditary, and if we're talking about people who just really didn't get mentioned at all this year, I feel like if we weren't feeling a little oversaturated on Anne Dowd, people would have maybe been talking about her Hereditary performance a little bit more, because I do think she's very good in it and terrifying, and like she's in this like terrifying mode now. Thank you, Handmaid's Tale. But like this feels different than that. And like just fundamentally unsettling in a way that's kind of hard to describe.
And she's funny too in really, really like sideways ways, like where you're not quite expecting it to be funny, but she manages to make a couple things funny about it.
I remember watching that movie. Like I was in the theater with my roommate and it was during the grief counseling scene, like her very first, like, "Hi, I'm Annie." And I see Anne Dowd like just in this wide shot, I see Anne Dowd and I just lean over my roommate and I was like, "Oh no."
Yeah. Yeah.
And I knew she was going to have a big part and I knew it wasn't going to be good. I knew it wasn't going to be for a good thing. And I was right. And I was so happy I was right because she was so good. But she didn't really get talked about enough. You're right about that. But she was so good in that movie. But
it is kind of like it shows you the advantages of when actors get cast in against type parts, though. It's so much easier for people to notice, oh, wow, because that's not what they're expecting from them. Yeah. Which is, I think, why Anne Dowd got so much attention originally from The Handmaid's Tale.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like she's never played dark characters before, but that was like between that and The Leftovers is how she got typecast in that, I think. But she was genuinely scary in both of those things, whereas before she'd always kind of been like a side character that was more relatable and warmer. And then suddenly she was very, very scary in two very prestigious things.
Yeah. Also, I don't know if you've ever seen her in Compliance.
Yeah, amazing.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I watched that in college, and that really messed me up.
That's like an acting masterclass, that performance.
When I saw that, because that was the first time I had ever seen her play like a really questionable, because I think it was before The Leftovers. It was the first time I've ever really seen her play like a really questionable, like, not great character. And at that point, because I hadn't seen her really in anything like that ever before. And when I watched it, I said to myself, oh my God, like she's got to get more, maybe some more villain roles or, you know, and be some crazy characters because she's good.
Yeah.
And here we are.
People definitely noticed her for that, which is why I always tell actors and publicists when they're considering campaigns that they think, do you think there's a chance? Should we push this? I'm always like, it doesn't matter if there's a chance, you should push it. If the person's deserving, you push it, because it actually really does help careers to run campaigns for them in something. Because then if it doesn't work, the next time around people are like, remember how great they were in ...
Yeah.
And I really think her campaign for compliance, which was self-funded, I believe, was really a smart business move, even though it looked like a crazy thing to do at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it made her, didn't it, basically? It brought her into the light.
I mean, the movie was so cheaply made. I mean, I can understand why she would do that.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Any final thoughts before we wrap up? Who are you rooting for in Best Picture? We briefly did this in our bios, but just want a quick couple comments. Robin, who do you want to win Best Picture?
I want to win. I want the favorite to win. It's my It's my favorite of the Oscar movies. But Roma, if Roma wins, you know, the admiration I have for that film, that would go down in the history books, you know, much better than, say, I don't know, Green Book, which apparently is, people I speak to, I don't know, Nathaniel, how you feel about this, it's going to get the votes, it's going to get the preferential ballot, and it's going to win Best Picture. And I still refuse to believe that's going to happen. But I still think Roma's going to win, but if the favourite wins, I'd be overjoyed.
Well, would Roma actually be your second choice, or you just think that you'd be happy with it?
I think so, yeah. I mean, it's a pretty, in my opinion, it's a pretty weak lineup. You know, those two are the strongest films for me.
Mm-hmm. And how about you, Chris?
The same. The favorite is easily my favorite film in the actual Best Picture lineup, but I do think I'm rooting for Black Panther. I'm really rooting for Black Panther to just get as much as it can, not just for Ruthie Carter in costumes. I actually think that this is the movie that could benefit from the preferential ballot, being that it's the one that everybody has seen and everybody has loved. Mm-hmm. I guess the question is, how seriously do they take the movie being a superhero movie? Mm-hmm. But I just kind of think if there's a time to reward a popular film, especially a genre that means a lot right now, we should do it when the artistry is this high for this movie. And like, I don't think that Black Panther is going to look like a bad win historically. Like, I don't know if a superhero movie has ever felt that way. Not even The Dark Knight.
People don't dislike Black Panther, which is good.
And it feels like a win-win for everybody. A Black Panther win might get them to stop doing the like terrible like ceremony killing things that the Academy is trying to do. And like, it feels like, again, it would be a win for everybody. Mm-hmm. ABC probably wants Black Panther to win, and it would not be a bad win, in my opinion.
Okay. Jenny?
I gotta go with Black Klansman. I've never been a big Spike Lee fan, honestly. Like, I've seen a lot of his films, but I've never been like, oh god, yes. Like, I've never really held a big torch for him. But this movie was, I loved it. I laughed. I cried. I cried especially at the end, and I did not expect to cry. Mm-hmm. And that really made me think, like, that this was like one of the best films I'd seen all year. It was definitely one of my favorites. And I also think now I think it would be a great time for something like that mm-hmm. to win. I don't think it will win, but I would want it to. I really would want it to win. And I really hope, if anything, I hope that Spike Lee can get Best Director, which I hope he will.
I'm rooting for Spike too.
Yeah.
And what is your second choice?
Second choice? I guess I would have to go with... Yeah, I'd go with The Favorite. Because mm-hmm. it was really... I did not know what to think when I first saw the trailers and everything like that. I didn't think I would like it. And I love Joaquin Phoenix's other movies. So, and... I saw Killing of a Sacred Deer late, and mm-hmm. by the time I saw that, I was like, well, now I gotta go see The Favorite. Because I loved it, and my legs were hurting for a few days afterwards, so I had to go, I decided to go watch that.
Spoiler.
Yes, sorry. So, after I got the ability to walk, I decided to go see it, and I really, really enjoyed it. And I saw it with my father, who is one of the harshest movie critics on the planet. Like, he does not like anything. And he walked out of that like, that was amazing. And I was like, oh, God. And it's like, if he likes it, then I think it earns a nomination, or at least a Best Picture.
Yeah, that's one of the, it's so funny about seeing things with like harsh critics. My dad was, he's passed away several years ago, but he, when we came out of Titanic, I thought, oh no, here I'm going to get this spiel about how bad it was, because my dad hates everything, or he did, you know. And he just was like on and on about how great it was, and I'm like, oh, that's going to win all the Oscars.
Yeah, that's it. Right. It's like, my father should be in the Academy. I don't understand right. why he's not.
Murtada, how about you? What are you rooting for?
I am rooting for Black Klansman, because Spike Lee has been treated shabbily by the Academy for decades, and it's about time they gave him Best Director and Best Picture. Mm-hmm. And I just also think it's going to be a fantastic moment if we see him. I think he's definitely winning screenplay, but if we see him more than once on the telecast, would be amazing. So I'm rooting for Black Klansman for Best Picture.
And what would be your second choice?
I just want to say one more thing about Spike. He was really disrespected this year. In every interview, he's being asked about Green Book, which is very disrespectful for that's another reason he should win three Oscars. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, wait. Is he really being asked about...
Yeah, every interview he does, they ask him what his thoughts are on Green Book. And it's like, you don't see Alfonso Cuarón, or you don't see Yorgos Lanthimos being asked about Green Book.
Are they asking Peter Farrelly about Black Klansman?
No, they are not.
Green Book wishes it was Black Klansman. That's all I'm saying, okay?
So, it's a lot of abuse, so he should win the Oscars.
Green Book wishes it was Driving Miss Daisy.
That's true.
Oh, wow.
Green Book wishes that it was a pizza covered in a hot dog slathered with a bolognese.
Oh, my goodness.
And my second choice would be A Star is Born, because if it won Best Picture, that would be the gag of the season. After all this.
Oh, people
would never. Sean Kent storms the stage and says, I did it!
I love A Star is Born too. A Star is Born would also be my second choice for Best Picture. And not for that reason, although the meltdown would be joyful to watch. But The Favorite would also be my vote. But honestly, like, even though I don't think as a whole lineup, it's strong because it has more than usual amount of movies that have no place being in that conversation. You know, usually there's one I can handle if there's one where you're like, what on earth? But when there's like three, you're like, what is going on here? Mm-hmm. And, because I actually like, half of the list, I think are really strong movies. So in that way, I would be happy with a win for Black Klansman or, Black Panther is not high up there for me. I like it, but I totally get what you're saying, Chris, and agree that if we're ever going to do that, this would be a good year to do that. Because, you know, when
it feels somewhat unimpeachable for me for that movie to win, especially if they're trying to play for the masses. Like, this is a great movie to do that with because it made Titanic money. It's the highest grossing films of all time, and it is authentically beloved by a wide swath of people. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, no, so I get it for that reason, and the craftsmanship is there, which for some popular movies is not true. So even when they get Oscars for their craftsmanship. So in that way, that would also be a good win. So I'd be happy in about four different ways.
Yeah. Well, and it's so difficult to kind of, like, predict. I think people are just falling back and saying, oh, it's going to be Green Book or, oh, it's going to be Roma. But, like, this feels like the tightest Best Picture race in a very long time, and that it could be a wide number of movies. Like, we don't want to imagine that it's going to be Bohemian Rhapsody. but I don't think that's fully not happening. And like even something like A Star Is Born, it's as easy to imagine it being a second place nominee as a seventh, you know?
Yeah.
I think the only one that it's fully not happening for is Vice.
Oh, God.
But like you can make an argument for everything else winning.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. I mean, the preferential ballot has definitely made the Best Picture race more exciting than it was before they started doing that. It's definitely, as we've seen the past few years, it's definitely harder to predict Best Picture now. Although it does feel like this is a Roma year, but I could be wrong.
I think it's most likely Roma.
Yeah.
That'd be great, too.
A lot of other movies have a fair shot.
Yeah.
If that won, I really would have no complaints. Yeah. I think that would be great for that, too, especially for how far Netflix has come.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of like the nominations that Beast of No Nation never got. So,
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for talking about the Oscar race and specifically Supporting Actress. I want to thank my guests again, Robin Wright from Filmotomy.
Thank you.
And where can people read you, Robin?
www.filmotomy.com. Hopefully you all know that already. I'm going to make sure I'm following you all on Twitter as well as soon as I'm finished this, I'm sure. Yeah, so that's my website there. You can find me on Twitter @Filmotomy as well. I'm usually there, pottering about.
And Ginny O'Keefe. And Ginny has written a couple times for us now at the Film Experience. We're very happy to welcome her.
Yay.
I'm so happy. Can I just got to say, this is how I got this. Chris, huge fan of this had Oscar buzz.
Aww.
Huge.
You're too sweet.
Oh, my God. I've been listening to it. Like, I started it. I got all the episodes in maybe a week.
Wow.
I couldn't stop listening to it. It was so great. And I was laughing my ass off because of you and Joe.
We try.
It was so good. And I got my sisters hooked on it, so it's great. And so then...
We are a gateway drug. Share it.
I love it. It's awesome. I love it. And it really is like one of my favorite podcasts right now and probably still will be for a very long time. But anyway, that's how I got with the Film Experience because you kept mentioning it and I was like, well, I got to check the vlog out and that was that.
Oh, cool.
So thank
you. I didn't
you
know for, that actually.
Like,
so.
Yeah. When I emailed you, I said like, by the way, one of your writers, Chris, like is just making me laugh my ass off. So that was that. But yeah, you can find me, I'm on IMDb. You can find me then Ginny O'Keefe and just look at my headshots if you want to. And and then I'm on Instagram at Here's Ginny. I don't have a Twitter, but I want to get a Twitter very badly. So I'll probably get a Twitter and very soon.
Okay.
Dude, and come tell jokes with us.
Yes, please.
And Murtada El Fadl.
Yes, I am on the Film Experience, and you can find me on Twitter at @ME_says, SAYS.
And you're branching out also. You're putting yourself out there.
Yes.
You just completed a gig with the theater. Tell
the
about the theater gig.
Oh. Yes, so I did an interview with Jordan Cooper, who is a rising star playwright. His first play is going to be staged at the Public starting next month. And the interview is actually on YouTube as well at the Public Theater website.
And we'll be posting it before this goes up as well.
Exciting.
And Chris Pyle.
Hi, guys. As Ginny so graciously mentioned, I also co-host the Sad Oscar Buzz podcast. You can find us on Twitter at @had_Oscar_Buzz. I'm also on Twitter at Chris B. File. That's F-E-I-L. You can also find me here on the Film Experience, weekly writing about soundtracks and other things.
I'll
do free spawn for the Sad Oscar Buzz. Don't worry.
Yes. We're doing Rent this week, so listen to our episode on Rent.
Oh, my God. I'm
a little scared to listen to that one, but... Yes, the brand is my God. Are you guys going to also be discussing the recent live TV musical version?
We recorded it the day of the live show, so it will not be discussed.
It wasn't even live.
You're right.
It wasn't live, yeah. 80% of it was
rehearsal what? Or something. Dress
rehearsal or something like that. And then the rest of it, you had a broken foot. How's that?
All right. Thanks again for everyone. And thanks to all you listeners who voted in the Supporting Actress SmackDown. And I don't actually know the winner at this time because I'm not through sifting through the ballots, but it's a tight race between Rachel Weisz and Regina King at the moment.
Yay!
So one of those two will be announced as the winner when this goes up.
We've ordered some lobsters and we thought we could race them and eat them.
All right. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks.